Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guys. People's Radio. It's all that G up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoops. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issue. Phil P, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric.
R&G fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You better act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Anybody can be busy.
Don't get no more realer.
Welcome to Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG, Renegade Radio, back in full effect. I'm your host, Marcus the Game Changer, and one-third of the illustrious three-man Boots. And wow, oh wow, do we have a show for you all tonight. We're going to get into it in a moment. First off, I'd like to say thank you for your patronage. You could have been anywhere in the world this evening, but you're here with us, the Renegades. Now, let me introduce my cohort, my man, 100 grand, Phil T. Sports PhD. What's happening, Captain?
Man, my blood pressure has finally come down from our conversation a week ago. I love the conversation that we had about Kobe Bryant and his rings and it was spirited. It was spirited, to say the least. And I'm looking forward to go a few rounds with you tonight and have a great dialogue.
Absolutely. And if you didn't catch it, you got to make sure you download last week's show. Go to the realsportsguys.com website. You can download the podcast there. Get it set up so that when we do these, they go directly into your iTunes.
Right.
And you can just check them out the next morning. That's the easiest way to get hooked up with the Real Sports Guys and get in tune with the Renegades. But make sure you check us out at realsportsguys.com. Last week's show, I mean, wow. Spirited, you're being nice, man. We got after it. it was definitely some tenacious D being played on that one. We got into talking about Kobe Bryant and his legacy and how many championships he won. And, you know, I said some things to push some buttons on my man PhD, and we had to break it down. We had to lay it out, man. And we're going to continue that conversation a little bit as we get into the intro to let you know this is a segment of the show where we break down what we have in store for you tonight. Again, we may or may not get to all of these things, but we're going to give it our best shot. You dig? So for tonight's show, during the funky editorial, we're going to continue that Kobe conversation because it sparked as far as some things. You know, PhD raised some real interesting questions, you know. I had to come to terms with my own dislike of Kobe Bryant. And, you know, I had to own that up. And PhD asked some questions that made me have to take a look in the mirror. So what I decided to do was, and, you know, he made the point that it was unfair. You know, the point I was making was that Kobe Bryant, yes, he won 5 championships, but I only count 2. And he had a problem with that. He said, who else do we do that to other than Kobe? And it's because we don't like Kobe. And he was right. So I did it for everybody else, too. So I went through and I did a championship audit.
Right. Audit. Please include the word audit.
Exactly. I went back into my list of all-time, our 50th greatest players, and I went through my top 25, and I went through and audited each guy. I evaluated each guy to figure out how many championships were they the best player on their team. How many championships did they actually lead a team to? And so I'm going to share some of that with you. You know, I told the fellas, it's kind of like the free report. Except it's the GC report.
Right. You know, and I have been asking for it. You know, Marcus gave a press release to us, to Devon and I, probably on Wednesday or Thursday, saying that he was working on, you know, the Game Changer report to do an audit. And I requested a forwarded copy. Okay, like I was Helen at the White House in the first piece. I requested a forward copy. You know, so I could do some preparation. And the Game Changer cleared all that up and said it'll be released on the 18th. You'll have 24 hours to review and respond. So we ready.
So they've had it. It's been in their hands. I didn't want to spring nothing on them. You know, I had to do my research. I wanted to give them the same opportunity to do their research and come up with counter argument. So we're going to get into that in the funky editorial. And honestly, that may take up the whole show.
It might. And please,
we'll
everybody be okay with that.
You're going to have to be okay with it. And I think you're going to enjoy it. So we'll dig into that. And if we have an opportunity, we'll hit on some All-Star Weekend talk and a 5 on the black hand side. We'll hit you up with some college hoops talk, talking about the Nerland Noel's injury, the impact on the season. We're going to talk about some teams that's picking up steam as we get into March, some teams losing steam. And then we're going to start talking about some MLB. We may get to that. Baseball talk, talking about overpaid baseball players. And then we'll hit you off with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. But with no more further ado, let's go ahead and get into the proceedings this evening.
Fellas, one thing we need to say.
Yes,
shall we say it, y'all?
Yes,
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman,
yes.
Ryan,
yes.
Say it.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. So, you know, on February 18th, the Game Changer report dropped. It was a championship audit. You know, in the NBA in particular, championships mean a lot towards the player's legacy. And, you know, we give players credit for championships, and championships will boost a player's standing when we think about where guys stand in the pantheon of all-time greats. So what I wanted to do is really look at what makes a championship and what championships should players get credit for and what championships should they get. They acknowledge that you are on a championship team, you're a champion. But there's a difference between being simply a member or a key piece to being the guy. And so what I did and what I set out to do in the Game Changer report was to separate the platinum from the white gold, as Jay-Z once said, and really begin to tier out the championships. So I created a new level of a championship, the Alpha Championship. Now, the Alpha Championship is a championship that to have it, when we say a player has an Alpha Championship, that means that they were the one dog on that team. They were the lead dog. And so that's what an Alpha Championship is. They had to be the most key component of that team. Now, that doesn't discount any other championship. It's just a different tier. It's just like the penthouse. And, yes, it's splitting hairs. But when you get to the top 10 greatest players of all time, all of these dudes were unbelievable, immaculate, game changers, so to speak. And so you have to begin to level it off in the most microscopic ways to determine who's the top dog of them all. You feel me? So we have the Alpha Championship. It has been created. And so we have to now delve in to these top 25 players of all time and look at how many championships they, how many championship teams they were on and how many championship teams they led. Very different. Now, we can debate the validity of the Alpha Championship concept in itself in a moment, and I'm gonna throw that out to my man PhD and just get his ideas around that particular concept. But first, I want to give you my methodology,
please,
so that you guys understand how I began to separate the platinum from the white gold, so to speak. I use the statistic win shares. I wanted to use a single measure. I didn't want to make it too complicated. I wanted to use something that was pretty simple. And win shares already exist, not something I made up. You can check out basketballreference.com. It's something that they have posted. You can get it for any player you can think of for their entire career, each season, all that good stuff. So I decided to use win shares. And the reason I decided to use win shares is because what I was going for was to figure out how this particular player's contributions on the court contributed to his team's success during the championship season, and how that compared to other players on the team. Win shares happened to be perfect for what I was looking for. And it actually added additional layers to kind of, again, what I had set out to do. So, and what is a win share? I'll give you the short, quick and dirty version. If you want to read more about it, feel free to do so. I had to. Basically what it does is it takes the players on the court, offensive contributions, on the court, defensive contributions, positive contributions, contributions that lead towards victory, and kind of wraps them up in a number. That number is indicative of and directly derived from how many games that team won. And so each player on the team gets a score of how many wins they've contributed. So if a team won 54 games, they have 54 win shares to spread around to all their players. So the most valuable guy is going to have the most win shares. And that's the way the stat works. So it boils down all of his contributions on offense and defense, statistical on-court contributions, into one score, one number, and then it equates that into how many wins he can be held responsible for his team. So that's basically what a win share is. Again, if you want to delve into it more, what stats they put in. You got to do that. I'm not going to get into all that. It's a whole lot of numbers. It made my head hurt. Probably make your head hurt. I'm just going to save y'all a headache. We're not sponsored by aspirin. We're sponsored by Resistance Digital. So we're not going to go there. So before we get into the report and some of the key highlights that I've given the guys from the report, the Alpha Championship concept. I want to give my man PhD to weigh in and get his perspective on this idea of the Alpha Championship and how it sits with him. Because he had some major issues with how I was framing up Kobe and saying I only count two of his championships. And we'll get Kobe's score in a minute once I go through some of the top guys or some of the guys who are mostly affected by my audit. First, I want my man PhD to weigh in on just the concept of the Alpha Championship. What do you think of that?
I think it's creative. I think it's creative, and for somebody who challenged your argument last week, you got facts to back it up, and you know, you went from a conceptual argument to more of an empirical type of study argument. So in that regard, I respect it. You know, I respect, you know, the fact that that you try to find something creative to support your story. So now for me, the Alpha Championship, it just doesn't, you know, I see basketball as one of the elite team sports. I will also say that I think more than the other two team sports that I follow closely, baseball and football, that one could argue that that in basketball, one player probably has the most control on the outcome of the game when you consider offense and defense. Now, yeah, there's some exceptions. You can talk about a quarterback. You can talk about a pitcher in baseball. But in basketball, overall team sport, you know, I get why we talk about individuals. I get why the argument of Kobe, you know, who's the best of all time, who's the best Laker. It's fun. I get it. I'm having a hard time accepting the alpha championship concept, but within the context of what you laid out, I certainly can have a discussion around it.
Okay. All right. And I appreciate your perspective. And I agree. I think, you know, basketball is one sport where, you know, one guy, because of the flow of the game and the pace of the game, you're asked to play both offense and defense pretty much simultaneously. I mean, you're going back and forth from end to end without any stoppage of play, without any shift changes or anything like that. One guy can have a tremendous impact on the outcome of a game. You know, for me, you know, thinking about that whole concept of the Alpha Championship really came from people talking about how important championships are. And so, you know, if it's just about winning, then we have to make sure that we don't muck the waters when we talk about winning. Because Robert Horry's got a ton of championships. You know what I'm saying? Sam Jones has got 10 championships.
Right.
You know, that doesn't make them the greatest player of all time. Derek Fisher's got 5 rings. Steve Kerr's got 3. You know, these are marginal guys. They have a lot of championships. You know, and there's nothing that's not to take anything away from their championships. But I think there's a big difference between how Robert Horry got his rings and Steve Kerr got his rings, or how Bill Russell got his rings, or Hakeem Olajuwon, or Shaquille O'Neal. So I think when we're thinking about, you know, those greats, you know, how many of their rings were they the man on? You know, were they that guy or were they a role player? Which is a different kind of, it's still a championship. But your role and your responsibility in that is very different as a player. And it doesn't lessen the contributions that you made at all, but it's different. It's a different position to be in when you have to carry the load. And so for me, I wanted to create something that acknowledged those guys who did that and still won championships. There are a lot of guys who carry loads and didn't win. Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Allen Iverson. It's hard to do. It's hard to beat a man and still lead a team to a championship. And I think that's why they give out Finals MVP awards. Because we recognize you were the most valuable player in this final series. We recognize that because there is a difference. That's why it's honored. That's why it's recognized. That's why you have the Finals MVP award and awards of the like, MVP awards in general. Because, yes, all contributions are valuable. It's a team sport. Everybody's going to win in the end. Everybody gets a ring. Everybody on the winning team gets a trophy. But in some cases, there were a couple guys who did a little bit more work, a little bit more of the heavy lifting than others. And some who just played better on those teams. And it's all right to acknowledge that. And so that's what I tried to set out to do, was find a way to figure out how to acknowledge those championships where guys truly were that dominating, driving force for those teams. And that guy who night in, night out was expected to produce. And if they didn't produce, there was no championship. And I think that's the other piece that we have to acknowledge is, you know, with these alpha titles, guys who won alpha titles, if they didn't play at the level they played at, their team wasn't going to win the championship. You know, and I think that's the other piece that, you know, it's not to take away from guys, but it's also to recognize that, this guy did that heavy lifting for that title team. So, you know, that's kind of the idea I was coming from with the whole thing. Moving in to talking about the actual Game Changer Report. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. brought to you by Resistance Digital. You're in the midst of the Funky Editorial, and we are talking NBA championships. We've done a championship audit, RSG style, going in, and we're talking about this idea of alpha championships and how many championships do our top 25 guys have as the lead dog, as the MVP caliber level player. Now, I'll go through my top 10 real quick, and then I'll just highlight some guys who we had to take some championships away from. So my top 10, Hakeem Olajuwon, number 10, he has two titles, two alpha titles. Oscar Robertson, he has one title, zero alpha titles. So he lost one after the audit. Number 8, Bill Russell. Bill has 11 titles.
You went
after
off.
The audit. Huh?
Duncan's your 10.
Oh. Oh, my bad. Oh, okay, so Duncan was my... I'm looking at a list, and I don't know if it's the same one you got. So Duncan was my 10. So why don't you read off your list of mine? Because this list may be different than the one that you had. But I know you have the most up-to-date one, because you had the one we gave on air. So this one may be before we went and gave ours on air.
You're
so
right.
What do you have?
Duncan Olajuwon Robinson. You just forgot Duncan.
Okay, all right. So Duncan, he has 4. I got him at 3 after the audit. So 3 of those are alpha titles. Dr. J, 1 title, 0 alpha titles. Larry Bird, 3 titles, 2 alpha titles. Wilt, 2 titles, 2 alpha titles. Magic, 5 titles, 4 alpha titles. Kareem, 6 titles, 2 alpha titles. Michael Jordan, 6 titles, 6 alpha titles.
I think the question the listeners must be thinking, for example, when you say Dr. J has 1 title, no alpha title, who do you award that alpha title to? Bird,
yes.
You have 3 titles and 2 alpha titles. Who do you award that other alpha title to?
Absolutely. So with Dr. J and his example, he won that same year Moses won his on that 4-4-4 Sixers team. Now, on that team, Moses was a leader in win shares during that season and during that playoff run. And what I did with the win shares is I counted up season win shares and playoff win shares to get one total score for the entire championship run. And Moses was a leader in win shares for that particular team. So he gets credit for that alpha title for that 4-4-4 Sixers team. For Bird, the one that he got subtracted goes to Robert Parrish. He was actually the win shares leader on the first championship Celtics team, I think it was 82-83. He was the win shares leader on that team. That was Bird's second or third or fourth year in the league, maybe. He was still kind of rounding into his dominant self. Still a good player, still a great player, still an all-star level player, but not the dominant force that we know Larry Bird as when we think of Larry Bird. And that's what you'll start to see is that a lot of guys got some titles taken away from them because either they were at the tail end of their kind of prime or they were kind of younger and still kind of coming into their prime. For example, with Magic's title, when he has five overall, he has 4 alpha titles. That first one goes to Kareem. Kareem was still kind of at the height of his powers at that point. Magic was coming in as that was Magic's rookie year. Magic had tremendous amount of contribution to that team, but Kareem was carrying the load night in and night out for that particular squad. Kareem led that team in win shares. So Russell, he lost a couple of his to a cat by the name of Bailey Howell.
Wow.
Exactly. I'm learning. So now I had to do some research on Bailey Howell, man. Decent player, you know, but those were towards the end of Russell's career as he started to move kind of into a player coach role, and that his role on that team began to shift. So again, there were different times. Oscar Robertson lost his one title to Kareem, who was an alpha on that title. So that makes up Kareem's two. So again, what it does is it takes the titles, the amount of titles won, and really boils them down. It really kind of makes them even more. It makes it more important when you have won one, because there are only so many to go around. You know what I mean? So if you weren't the MVP, you can't. If you weren't the best player on that team, if you weren't the lead dog, you can't count that title. So when you say Michael Jordan has six titles, he's really got six titles, where he was that guy on that team. You know, and it's not like you can get one and piggyback and say, oh, I got a title too. So it even makes it a little bit more elite to have one, you know, one of these alpha titles. When you have a couple, it's even more elite. Ginobili stole one from Tim Duncan. People question me having Ginobili in my top 50. He's got an alpha title. I'll leave that at that. So, you know, thinking about modern-day guys, KG has one. Dwayne Wade has one. LeBron James has one, the most recent one. He won with his alpha title. Then you have a guy like Jason Kidd, who has a title, but he was not the best player on that team. That goes to Dirk Nowitzki. So Dirk Nowitzki gets the credit for that title that year. So, again, it makes things more a little bit more exclusive, a little bit more elite.
Yeah, the Garnett and Pierce title is a tricky one there. You want to explain that?
Yeah. Well, KG, you tell me I need to check my numbers?
Well, no. You know, I think this is a great example where people will say, well, what about the recent Celtics title where you had Ray Allen, you had Pierce, and you had Garnett.
Exactly.
And all three of those were heavy contributors, and
absolutely,
even if you take a step
absolutely
further, you might even say Pierce may have been a little more important to the naked eye than Garnett, so that might deserve a little bit more explanation there.
Yeah, absolutely, and again, with the win shares formula, they take into account both contributions on the defensive end and offensive end, and again, there are a lot of different types of plays and types of performances on certain kind of situational plays that go into that particular formula. That gives the score, but the numbers have KG having the most impact playoff-wise and regular season-wise combined on that particular team. And, again, that doesn't mean that Paul Pierce didn't contribute. He still gets a ring. He just doesn't get credit for that alpha title as that guy that led that statistically, from an on-court perspective, led that team. And, again, it's a balance of offensive and defensive production. Pierce may have carried a little offensively, but defensively, KG was like the quarterback of that squad. And so,
and that's,
you know,
an interesting point that you make, quarterback, because when I hear you talk about these alpha titles, I'm comparing it to how we look at Super Bowl winning quarterbacks.
Right.
There's only been a certain number of Super Bowls. There's only been a certain number of guys who have won, quarterbacks who have won multiple Super Bowls. And that's kind of how we define quarterbacks, is by Super Bowl victories. And, you know, to me, and I've made this, like, this comment before, I think it's even more of a ludicrous thing that we do, and we all do it, to say Joe Flacco just won a Super Bowl. Yes, he did, but he didn't play defense. He's only, you know, offense, you can make an argument that he's heavily involved, but, you know, anybody who knows football knows that maybe that left tackle, maybe that defensive end, that cornerback, in some ways had as much to do with winning that championship or close, a significantly close proximity to what the quarterback did to win that championship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's not to take away from, and then put it in a football perspective, it is much like that, slightly different. Because guys in basketball do play both ends, and you do got to check somebody, and you do got to contribute on both ends, and your impact is measurable. Whereas, again, with a quarterback, yeah, you know, he can be the greatest quarterback in the world, but if the line don't block, the line don't block. You know, if the line ain't blocking, then it ain't popping. It ain't going to happen. And so that, you know, I think that's where it's a little bit different, but very similar. And what I think this does, doing it this way and thinking about it this way, it removes that whole piece of, well, he's got so many rings. Right, but how many of those rings was he running it on? You know, and that's the kind of argument that, because it's right, with quarterbacks, we say, oh, well, he's got a Super Bowl championship, so he's good. He's a good quarterback. He's a decent quarterback. But, again, we talked about this last week. Flacco, I don't think any of our books is necessarily elite. But is he a quarterback who can win you a championship? Yes, he's proven that. He's a quarterback who can go out there and quarterback your team to a championship. He can play well enough to put your entire squad in position to win a championship. Now, is he the type of quarterback with a mediocre roster who can go out there and put you in position to win a championship on his own? No. And I think that's a bit what this starts to get at, is who are the guys who, you know, and not to say that these guys have mediocre rosters. They all had other great players on their teams. But who are the guys that have actually done that and have actually taken a squad and elevated them to the level of a championship team? Because, again, it's, in our minds, it's what separates a Dominique Wilkins from, you know, a Dr. J, where Doc got a title. Scotty has six. Dominique was a hell of a player.
Yeah.
An amazing player. But what's the knock on Dominique? Well, he never won anything. Well, maybe if you put Dominique with Mike, maybe he does win a cup. Maybe he wins six rings, too.
Maybe, you know, Mark, he does it. Before we bring Devon in, why don't you share how your theory of game shares and alpha titles applies to Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas won two championships with the Bad Boys. When you think about the Bad Boys, he's probably the first player that comes to mind. So talk about how you broke him down, those two championships, and your rationale of that before we bring Devon in.
You're trying to get me killed. You're going to bring Devon in after I go in and own Isaiah.
Well, he was my favorite player, too, growing up. So, you know.
I know, right?
You know, I'm building you up and tearing you down.
You got backup. Like, why don't you go ahead and tell him about Isaiah?
Right. I'm building you up to tear you down now.
I got it. Okay. So let's talk about Zeke. So Zeke was one of the players that got majorly penalized. He has two championships. And again, when you think about those Bad Boy teams, that 89 and the 90s Pistons, or the 88, yeah, the 89 and the 90s Pistons squads, you think about Zeke as the first player that comes to your mind. He was the face of the franchise. Now, his statistical contributions to the team, based upon his win shares measure, don't add up to him being that guy. It'd be interesting to go back and be able to watch every game of those seasons to see if having this knowledge would I look at those teams differently or look at the play differently. But the win shares measure doesn't mark Isaiah as the best player on those championship teams. In the first championship year, he finished third in win shares behind Bill Laimbeer and I think it was Dennis Rodman. And on the second championship team, he finished fourth in win shares behind Laimbeer, Rodman, and Dumars. So, you know, and on the team that went to the finals in 87-88, he was also third. That team lost to the Lakers in the finals. And then on the 86-87 team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals and lost, he was also third. Zeke, for me, this one was like, wow. And again, I feel like I learned so much about, you know, I just gained a different perspective on viewing things. You know, but based on his win shares numbers, Zeke would be viewed as, you know, we view Zeke as an all-time great point guard. I still say, regardless of win shares or not, Zeke had the best handle of any point guard I've ever seen. The best handles of any point guard I've ever seen.
Yeah, Devon and I both had him in our top 20. Devon had him at 17. I had him actually at 22 and you had him at 19. This is before we brought in the win share.
Yeah. So after this win share piece, I probably would push him down a few notches. Possibly just outside my top 25 and in the 30 to 25 range on my list. And the reason I would is just because, again, a lot of Zeke's mystique is tied up in winning and it's tied up in his competitiveness. And he's still a competitor. But, again, when you start to think about how much of his on-court contributions actually led to wins, you have to kind of reassess that piece about the winning. And that's the thing that I think when you look at the win shares, it kind of helps you kind of start to begin to shift. Now, when you look at career win shares over somebody over the course of their career, Zeke ranks 135th in career win shares. Now, that puts him in the category of guys who have more win shares than Isaiah Thomas. And when I rattle off these names, you're going to start to scratch your head. Amari Stoudemire has more win shares than Zeke. Chris Webber has more win shares than Zeke. Chris Bosh.
I think it's important to you know, and maybe you talked about this before. Like, maybe you talked about this before.
Can I jump in here?
Win shares, if a team wins 60 wins for a season, that means there's only 60 win shares to go around.
To go around.
Now, Isaiah played on some really bad Detroit teams that didn't win many games, and this is where I will pass the baton over to Devon.
Yes. Well, hold on, because some of those guys played on bad teams, too. And let me finish my list for people. You got Rod Strickland. You got Rod Strickland. You got Sam Cassell. You got Tim Hardaway also have more win shares than Zeke. You got it, Devon?
Am I in? First of all, would you don't take into account, I think this is where Isaiah might pressure stuff a little bit, is because, and I didn't hear your whole breakdown of win shares, but Isaiah made a conscious decision to position other players to rise. He made a conscious decision to lower his scoring output for winning. He made a conscious decision to engage in other activity that allowed for other people to build up their game. He made a conscious decision. Even in the 87 game, if you look at the 87 tournament, if they win that game, they win that, and that's a foul on Kareem. The moment was when he went for 18, was that 25, whatever that was in the quarter, where he was on one leg. But he made a conscious decision to pick his spots because he knew that to win, he had to get other people involved to help him win. So I don't know where that gets calculated into win shares. Because if you talk to any of his teammates, he sacrificed a lot for them to do what they do. He made a conscious choice to do that. But he was
right.
Like,
and yeah, and so what I would say is win shares does account for that because it accounts for positive contributions towards winning. So if he's getting more assists or if he's, you know, not taking shots, it's not just like scoring. It's about his offensive efficiency. It's about his effectiveness as far as create his per point, his usage rate, and his per possession, his point total, his points per possession that he finishes. So all those things kind of go into account as far as efficiency and how they operate on offense, and then also his defensive efficiency, and all those things also are taken into account when you talk about win shares. So he may have sacrificed his offensive numbers for other guys to shine, but what win shares also does is it takes into account what your contributions on defense are. And
he set the tone on defense. He actually set the spirit of the defense. So you could say his individual.
Right, he may have set the spirit, but the other cats still got to play defense.
They don't play without him leading, insisting that they do that. Right? So their production,
right.
Rodman produces because Zeke demands that. Now, he's a great athlete, but Zeke's leadership gets Rodman to play at that level. Zeke,
right.
Coaching of Dubar is taking to play at that level. And yes, their win shares are up, but the only reason their win shares are up is because Zeke has pushed them and motivated them to play at that level.
Right. But if you're pushing them and they're playing better than you, they got to get credit for playing better than you.
Like, yeah, you can push them to play defense, but if they actually play defense better than you play defense, that same level of intensity.
The thing about it is, how many of those games started out with him as the primary? If you start, you play in the Pistons, you start with Zeke. So he's created. You start when you all those years. If you play in the Pistons, you start with Zeke.
Yes, and maybe we shouldn't. And that's what the win shares. The numbers say maybe we shouldn't. We do.
But maybe we shouldn't because he was the biggest personality. Zeke, you can say, well, his efficiency went down. Because you are getting it out of his hands. You're making him do things you don't want him to do. He's creating that. If you went back and watched those games, Dumas got shot early on in his career or all the way through because where Zeke was on the floor.
And what Sharon says is that because Dumars was getting those shots, they won. If Zeke was taking those shots, they may not have won. And so Dumars needed to take those shots.
Dumars doesn't get those shots maybe if Zeke's not on the floor. It's like the UB Brown rule that says if this guy plays, he scored efficiently in 15 minutes. What if he goes up to 35 minutes? You take Zeke out of that question, out of that equation, none of those guys get, but their win shares go anywhere.
No, you're right. It's a different situation, but those guys are still leading that team in win shares. The win shares will go down, but those guys are still going to lead that team in win shares.
They may not.
If you take Zeke is an all-star. Zeke was still an all-star level role player. He's still an all-star level player.
But if you watch the game, this is where your win shares go down. Is that your ability to play? It's created by somebody's ability to create
right.
opportunity.
And what I'm saying, D, is if you take Zeke out of that equation, right, their overall win, the overall effectiveness of everybody is going to go down proportionally.
Significantly.
Right? So everybody, even the guys behind them, but those guys that were ahead of Zeke are still going to be at the top of the team's win shares. They're still going to be the most effective players on that team. They were made more effective by Zeke's presence. Absolutely.
Absolutely. He made them more effective.
But they made him effective as well.
So you say Stoudemire's win shares makes him a more effective player.
It says he's contributed to more wins in his career than Zeke.
In context.
His statistical contributions have led to more wins than Zeke.
In context. So even if you take those Central Division team. So you're talking about at a time when Zeke played, if you looked at the strength of that Central Division through the height of most of his career, and you looked at what Stoudemire was dealing with.
Yeah,
you put Zeke on Stoudemire's team.
I think the problem is when we look at statistics and metrics are very helpful to help put together a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
It can't be the end-all, be-all in terms of a metric. You know, I think about Moneyball.
Yeah.
Billy Beane had to do what he had to do because he had a limited budget. If he had the ability to get Jeter, if he had the ability to get A-Rod in his prime, and even though the metrics may not line up as much, he would have got those players. I think that the story you're putting together makes your argument stronger, Marcus, than where it was last week from my perspective. And, you know, I don't know if you unveiled it, but Kobe Bryant went from having 5 championships on paper to 2 that you gave him last week to the win share now has even put his championship total lower. I'll let you unveil that. So, you know, I think when we take a step back, the statistics can help tell a story. And trust me, I mean, I teach graduate-level statistics. I am a statistics guy, okay? But, you know, even in research, we can't ignore the obvious when you take context, situation into account. And so your argument of Isaiah, you know, okay, you know, I've got an Isaiah bias, but okay, I get the rationale, but when you take a step back, sometimes when you play with certain players, special players, think about Jason Kidd when he was with the New Jersey Nets. Even though his statistics may have not have matched up with some of the more higher scoring point guards in the league, he made everybody around him better. Even though his assist totals, like he's the anti-Rondo. His assist totals were always amongst the league leaders, but he could have gotten even more because he often made the pass that led to the pass that was the actual assist. He made the better basketball play. And so in that example, metrics don't account for that. They don't have the ability to account for that.
Jason Kidd led that team in win shares. Those next teams that were going to the finals, he led those teams in win shares.
He was their best player, I'd argue.
Yeah.
But if you looked at
even
other
point guards
in the league.
Even though he set other people up, he made other people better, that's why he led the team in win shares.
So, Marcus, are you suggesting this is a perfect statistic?
Nope. I'm just saying, it like you said, it's a piece of a puzzle. It's a piece. And what the piece is telling us is that sometimes what our eyes see may not necessarily be what statistically it may not be that player's true statistical impact. So, yes, there are some intangible impacts that guys have. I acknowledge that through and through. Isaiah,
so we have a guy,
Bryant,
who averaged 22 points and 6 boards in the first championship, 28 and 5 in the second championship, 25, 5 and 5 in the third championship. And then later on, he averaged 26 and 27 points per game. This is regular season. His playoff numbers even went higher. And we get to the point where one metric tells us that, okay, he was not the most significant player based on win share. But when you sit there and watch the games and you know basketball, okay, and you sit there and watch the game and you say, well, the defense has to account for Kobe so much, this is why other players are getting open shots. This is why other players are getting one-on-one matchups in the post because they can't help off of so-and-so. And so I get your argument where you talked about the Pistons, why the other players' win shares would increase. Well, without Isaiah, the win share total will go down in terms of overall. They're not winning 60 games. They're going to win less.
Absolutely.
And they're not winning.
But those guys will still be the most important players on those teams. You see what I'm saying? So, yes, the total number of ones that are available to go around will go down.
Do you believe truly, if you took him out of that Dubois and those players would have been those players without Isaiah?
No, but would Isaiah have been Isaiah without those players? Would Isaiah have won anything without those players?
He was already
he wasn't winning nothing, though.
He was going to play for Terry Tyler and Benson.
He wasn't winning nothing. He wasn't winning a championship with them dudes.
But the thing about it is,
We're talking about championship season.
Let me take Moneyball.
Because Dominique was great. Allen Iverson was great. They got rings.
But let's take Moneyball. As much as Oakland did, yes, they played, but they never. With the buddy ball, they never got over the top. Because getting over the top has an it to it. Has a play to it. Has a qualitative aspect to it that gets you over the top. It might get you into the ballpark. Money ball might get you into the playoffs. But money ball doesn't necessarily get you championships. And if you look across it, they talked all that money ball, and there's no championship in Oakland. So at some point,
right? He was using the metric as a predictor. This metric is not a predictor. This is what happened, and this is who contributed the most. That's all this metric is. This metric is not trying to predict who's going to do what. It's saying during this season, based upon these statistical contributions that these players made in certain situations, these were the most valuable guys.
But that's only part of the context, but it doesn't put context. So unless you can find a way to
put
it
does, because it puts it in the context. It puts it in the context of the game. It puts it in the context of actual game, not hypothetical, but actual game.
You play basketball. So let me tell you, you play basketball, and I know your win, whatever it is, your win statistics should have been up. What if you look at, they said it's you are third on your team. Now, I watched the game. And I know half the shots everybody else got, they wouldn't have gotten if you weren't on the court.
Right.
Just know it. And wouldn't have gotten because of the stuff that you did in practice that allowed for them to play the way they played on the court. So, yeah, they win sets right up, but they win sets right up because you spent time with them shooting around the rim on the court. You made them practice like that. In practice.
Absolutely, and I'm not denying it.
But your win shares go down because you made that sacrifice.
Right, because in order for us to win, those guys needed to produce more on the court during the game. You see what I'm saying?
I'm not saying Isaiah wasn't important to those teams.
What I'm saying is that his statistical on-court contributions, for them to be successful, his had to go down. His were down, and those other guys needed to be the guys to lead. That's all it is. That's all it says. Not that Isaiah wasn't important, but again, if other guys had to get, if for us to win, other guys had to score more, than had to have a higher win share or do more in the game, then that's what needed to happen to win. And when we get to Kobe, that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit. We're going to get into that.
This is prime real estate here. Let's kick it to our sponsors for a quick word.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, welcome back to the Real Sports Guys. We're talking about the Game Changer Championship Audit. RSG style audit of championships. We're talking about alpha titles. We're talking about win shares. It's an intense conversation, man. We just talked about Isaiah, Isaiah Thomas and his legacy, and how many titles he has. And, you know, we're talking about sacrificing. And D. Wills brought up the idea that Isaiah sacrificed his statistical numbers for wins, which is very true, which is absolutely true. He sacrificed so that other guys could be more statistically important, so to speak. Doesn't mean that his contributions, him doing that, wasn't a key piece of them winning. It was an intangible piece, but it was a key piece. That idea of sacrificing so that for winning leads me into talking about Kobe Bean Bryant, Black Mamba. All right. Based upon win shares, Kobe is the most overrated number two in history. The most overrated number two. He's not a number one, not a lead dog, most overrated number two ever. The reason I say this because Kobe, the numbers show anytime Kobe's won a championship, he has been the second most. He has had the second highest win share total on his team. Second highest. He has never led a team to a championship with the highest win. He's never won a championship with the highest win total, with the highest win share total. Any team that he's been on that has had the highest win share total has not won a title. Matter of fact, the Laker teams that he has led in win shares have averaged 45 wins in those seasons. When he has led them in win shares. Now, he is 17th all-time in career win shares. Only KG, Dirk, and Tim Duncan are ahead of Kobe. He only finished in the top 10 in win shares once during the Kobe Shaq years. And during the Kobe Gasol, these Kobe Gasol teams, he hasn't led the team in win shares at all. Gasol has been top 10 in win shares in both
of the title seasons, Kobe was only top 10 in one. So
coming to this whole sacrificing for wins, to me, this is where the win share thing really sheds some light and tells a bit of Kobe's story a little bit differently than how the narrative has been played out for us. Kobe is a guy who has a hard time sacrificing for wins. And I think that's what, when we talk about Isaiah was able to do that. Isaiah could have had higher win share totals. He could have done more statistically. But as you pointed out, D, Isaiah did other things to make other guys more relevant because that's what needed to happen for him to be a champion. And maybe somebody else needed to be the lead dog for them to be a champion as far as the on-court production. Now, he may have been a locker room lead dog. He may have set a tone. He may have done all those other things that you need somebody to do. But, again, that guy doesn't always have to be your best on-court performer. He still may be a great leader. Every great leader doesn't necessarily statistically put up big numbers. And when you're looking at Kobe, in my opinion, has been more concerned with putting up big numbers than doing what he's needed to do to win. And that's why when it's his team and he has to carry the load, he's been unsuccessful. At least that's what the numbers show. And again, these numbers are based upon actual wins. His team's performance. And his team's only average 45 wins a season when he has been the win share leader of those teams. What?
Go ahead, Devon.
Well, you know, and again, I mean, some of that plays my point that I played out when I was arguing about where Kobe sits in history. And so I wish there was a way we could probably put it in context. I think if we find a way to put it in context, actually in that situation, you might support your situation with Kobe more with that, but that kind of getting that context, the element of how do you evaluate leadership? Because I don't think in some of those cases Kobe would go up in the leadership side of it. It is why his win shares are going out. But this whole element of where leadership plays in this as well is something that I would be, if we could figure out how to put that into a quantitative dimension and kind of figure out how to add that into the mix, I think you're on to something. I'm just, and I, you know, part of it is I have to take a step back because you touched another with Zeke because I think he often gets, and I still can't watch the 92 thing without getting pissed, but he often. I feel like he doesn't get the credit he needs to get, but because of people not putting his game in context. The Kobe is interesting because I've been arguing some of those issues with Kobe before, and I think it fits with what you said about the greatest line you use is, you know, he had the holes the whole time and didn't let anybody know he had the holes. And my argument with Zeke is that, and your, against your stuff, is that if Zeke had the holes, everybody got the holes. He probably showed people how to find the holes. He actually told people we need to use the holes.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
How do you quantify that?
You're better with the holes than me. Zeke would say,
yeah,
you're better with the holes than me. You take it.
Yes.
But you're going to hold it and you're going to point it in the right direction. You're going to point it over there. And you're going to keep pointing right there, and you're going to point,
right.
And every time you put it down, I'm going to slap you in the back of the head.
That's right.
That's what Zeke would have done, and I acknowledge that.
If we get that piece in there, because Stoudemire is not going to show you the holes. Stoudemire didn't know there was a holes invented. You know what I'm saying? he thought that we're still digging trenches. So that piece, if we can figure out how to put that, because that still puts Kobe in that context about my whole thing against Kobe is his will to win that wasn't in the context of leadership, meaning that part of the leadership is sacrifice. And even when you talk about Michael's evolution of his game had some sacrifice in it in a way that he evolved in other areas of his game. And so that's the piece that I'd love to be able to unpack when you're talking about this. I mean, this is fascinating, and I'm trying to get my head around it. And it is part of it, but I agree with
part of, and we all agree, context is important. And if we can find a way to kind of put that in, I think we got something. This is what I love about Real Sports Guys. You're not getting this kind of conversation anywhere else.
All right. Absolutely. I want D. Wills. I want PhD to weigh in on the Kobe piece because he's digested it. He said he was making a list earlier, checking it twice. So PhD, Kobe Bryant, zero alpha titles, five titles as a number two.
So I watched those championships, and you know he was a Hall of Fame player on those teams. So he has five championships in my book. I appreciate the fact that you went out and tried to find a creative way to support your argument. And what I would say is that I think that the statistics you shared, especially saying that when Kobe was the win share winner on his team, they didn't win more than 45 games. I think that might speak to why he doesn't have more than five championships. But whenever we get to a point where we're taking away, you know, a guy has five championships, which in all circles, when you look at modern sports, that is the epitome. Okay? When you look at our generation, that is at the epitome level with Jordan, with Derek Jeter. I mean, a guy wins five championships and we're finding creative statistics to take them away. At some point, we have to listen to that little birdie in our head saying, don't do it. This is your conscience. Don't do it. Take into account, you know, okay, statistics. We'll allow that to explain 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% of my argument. But don't ignore your eyes. Don't ignore your knowledge of the game to know how much he impacted the game, controlled the game, and was important in those championship runs. So from that standpoint, you know, I think we have to respect the fact that he has five. Now, to your point of alpha championships versus non-alpha, you know, I'll quarrel with you about the Shaq ones, you know, and I'll probably start off giving you the first one, Kobe's third or fourth year in the league. Okay, and I'll quarrel with you over the last two. And, you know, it's a 50-50 quarrel. Now, the last two that he won with Odom and Gasol, you know, you're going to have a hard time convincing me or 99.9% of the pundits, and you make up that 0.1%, okay? convincing us that Kobe Bean Bryant wasn't the most responsible person in winning. You know, I liken it to sometimes we give, like Anthony Davis last year, if we were to calculate win share, he may or may not have been the most significant player on the Kentucky teams. I don't know. Just throwing that out. But watching the game, anybody who knows basketball knows that nobody affected that game, those games, more than Anthony Davis did. And knowing Kobe Bryant, knowing his personality, knowing his level of competitiveness, knowing that as he goes, the team goes. Whether he scores 20, 40, 10 assists, that's his team. And so, you know, it's just, I think you're brave to go unconventional, you know, and I give you props for that. But I think the statistics can only go so far to tell us a part of the story, even if it's a significant part of the story. The last thing I'll say is, I think this still comes back to, you know, implicit comparison of Jordan and Pippen. I mean, Jordan and Kobe. And I think of NFL running backs. If I were to ask you all, who's the best running back of all time? I'm sure names like Walter Payton, Jim Brown would come out. You know, Emmitt Smith, whoever it is. But with NFL running backs, we don't get caught up as much with, well, Emmitt wasn't the first to do it the way that he did it, so I'm not going to give him credit. You know, Emmitt tried to be too much like Barry. Emmitt tried to be too much like so-and-so. And so we're going to deduct. It's like, no, Emmitt did what he did. Sweetness did what he did. Jim Brown did what he did. And in football, we can appreciate that so much more. But in basketball specifically, I mean, if you ask for the best two guards of all time, the list probably starts with Jordan. It does start with Jordan. And Kobe is on that list, whether he's second or third, whatever it is. But yet, we have a hard time awarding him championships.
I mean, my thing is not about whether or not he got championships. This is where I look at it. Destiny Child, let's say, won 5 Grammys. But Beyonce sang 3 only to those, on those. And somebody else sang 2 on the other. They got 5, but Beyonce was out there doing her thing. It was alpha. But you acknowledge that they got 5 Grammys, but, you know, she did her thing on 3. And part of that is, you know, who put that down. And I think for Kobe is, when I heard you talk about it, the last 2, I don't know what the win shared or whatever, the 2 he won with Gasol, now he won for the same reason I said about Isaiah. He allowed those young pups and those old pups to do what they did. He created the context for them to be there. Gasol was scared. It was Kobe's motivation that allowed for Gasol, who's a talented player, to perform at that level. He was driving them. And I think that's where win shares doesn't get into. They don't get into the stuff that's in the bus. It doesn't get into the context. It doesn't get into the fact that Kobe might be riding somebody that might allow for Gasol to get off. He might be riding the guy that's guarding him to get him distracted. All those little things that they do on the court that create the context for a person to do more, that's where it doesn't get. So it does give you 70% of the argument, but I think the other piece, the context, is something that we always got to bring in. My argument with Kobe is still, and I think the most, and I'm glad Game Changer came up with all this stuff, but I think the most brilliant thing that has not been countered is his holes argument. Because it does pull out an element about Kobe that nobody disputes.
Yeah, and I can get into that. I can get into that.
To me, I think that's the most credible argument against Kobe. Is that,
and
when you said that was the most brilliant thing.
Yeah, and if you allow me to
I can expound upon that a little bit, as I've been kind of letting this percolate in my head over the last week or so since we kind of had this conversation.
There are a couple of things. You brought up the Jordan comparison, PhD, and I think you're spot on. I think as far as, you know, people saying, well, he did it like Mike. And honestly, I think that's the only reason he's in the conversation as far as Michael Jordan goes. Again, you brought the example of Dominique Wilkins earlier. If you put Dominique Wilkins on a team with Shaquille O'Neal, he has 3 titles too. If you put Kobe on them Atlanta teams, he got no rings. He got great numbers, but no rings. I think post-Jordan era, the NBA needed somebody to fit in that mold, and Kobe walked like a duck, he talked like a duck, he chewed his gum like a duck, and so we called him a duck, but I don't think he was ever a duck. You know, and that's the piece of the story that I think the numbers show, is that he was never a duck. Anytime he had to be there are tons of stats beyond win shares that say when Kobe takes a certain amount of shots, his team sucks. But that's his game, is to shoot, and that never deterred him from shooting. And that's that sacrifice piece. But when you want to talk about leadership, that even damages Kobe even more, because he has never been able to do that, to take that step back. He's still doing it to this day where he can't take that step back. He can do it for 7 or 8 games, but he can't do it for a sustained period of time, even if winning is the goal. His goal is to be great. His goal is to be the greatest ever. Winning is a result. Winning is something that he needs to do to be the greatest ever. Mike wanted to win. He just wanted to beat you at whatever. I don't know if that's Kobe. Where LeBron, for a while, he seemed like he just wanted to be the most famous. Kobe wants to be the greatest. And winning is something that will help him get that. But so is scoring. And so whichever one, he feels like he has to do both to reach those goals. I don't think Kobe's ever been the single-minded competitor that the media has tried to create this narrative of. And that's what this did for me. It's like this narrative of Kobe as the next Mike was not really true. He was more of a, I mean, statistically, he was more of a two. He was more of a Scotty.
And I'll say this before I wrap up, because, you know, I just came away from synchronized swimming practice. And I'm going to tell y'all, all y'all,
hey, big up,
the Olympics. Have a lot of respect for those young women. It's some tough stuff. But I got
the things that fathers do for their children.
Yeah, I got the dolphin down now. I'm doing some serious things. I'm about to morph some gold. But what I'll say is, and this is to get back to even, I'll wrap this up. But Phil, and I'll say about Emmitt, we would say that Emmitt had a Hall of Fame wide receiver, a Hall of Fame quarterback, and maybe a Hall of Fame tight end. So we do put things in context even with running backs. And we say that, you know, that Walter had to do it with nobody. So we do make those same type of debates and arguments with running backs as we do sometimes with basketball players. But what I would say about this, my argument about Kobe, is there were times, this is your point I think you just hit about, because you think greatness is about scoring. There were times on some of those teams where he might have had low win share, where he probably should have done what Zeke would. He probably would have been better. The team probably would have been better if he averaged 18 and 9 assists. And that was the sacrifice. Because he was skilled.
Yeah, and I'll use myself as an example. You know, we talked about me playing in college. You know, I was a number two my junior year, you know, my sophomore year. My senior year, I was a number one. And the first 20 games of the season, I'm trying to go out and score 22, 25 every night because I think that's what I need to do for us to win. Me and Cecil sat down one day after a real tough loss. It was heated in the locker room, people going back and forth, people yelling at each other. He and I sat down. We sat down with the other captain, and we just talked about that in particular, sacrificing. Like, maybe I don't need this. Maybe our team isn't best when I score 25. Maybe if I score 16, I average 18. Maybe if I score 16 tonight, we win more games. And so that's what I got focused on, was not trying to put up 25, put up 20, but maybe 17, 16 points was enough, and giving other guys an opportunity and making sure other guys were effective. And we started to win. We won four out of our last five games at the end of that season. And that's what I don't see Kobe ever being able to do. I don't see him ever being able to say, I'm going to sacrifice my numbers for wins. That's something that
and that's what he's got to do with this
show
team
Kobe
he's got
doing.
Right now. And that's what he's got to do with this team right now, is for this team to be successful, he actually has to sacrifice points and elevate Howard and others for him to win.
And realizing that his teams are successful when he's a two.
That's right.
And that's what he won't that's where, again, like, that's what the number, that's what the statistics show, is that your teams have been, when you've been a two, you've won championships. When you've tried to be the one, it hasn't worked. That's the piece of the puzzle that the stats tell. Does it tell everything? Nah, it doesn't. I get that. It doesn't tell everything. But, again, I think part of the piece is that people try and make Kobe out to be this kind of guy who can take a team and just make it a good team. And he's just winning, and he can wheel teams to championships. And that's not who he is. He's not a guy who's going to win championships as a one. And I think that's the difference when you get up to the top, is that guys can win titles. Like, if Akeem is on your team, you got a shot. You know what I'm saying? If you got Kareem, you got a shot. You got Mike, you got a shot. You got Kobe, he might need some help. That's what everything says. When Kobe's been by himself,
you got a shot.
Right. When Bron was by himself, you had a shot. Bron took some weak Cavaliers teams to the finals. May not have won nothing, but you had a shot. That's what the greats, when Magic, you put Magic on most teams, you got a shot. Whether they got talent or not, he's going to make the guys around him better. Kobe, not so much. Dominique, not so much. AI, not so much. If Kobe had stayed in Charlotte when he got drafted, his narrative would I doubt he would have won any championships. But he got sent to an organization that was going to put stuff around him. If Kobe and AI swap places in that 96 draft, and Kobe goes 1 and AI goes 13, AI's got 3 rings. I don't know if he gets any more, but he's got 3. I don't know if Kobe gets any in Philly. And there's no proof that he could. There's no proof, anecdotal or empirical, that Kobe Bryant can win a championship as a 1.
And there's no proof that Michael Jordan can win a championship by himself. He didn't.
Absolutely, but he was the most valuable player on those teams. Statistically and visually.
Yeah, I don't argue that. And let me just make my blanket statement for the week.
Yeah, you might want to go there where you start getting emails and tweets.
Right.
It's like a radar that goes on when somebody say something bad about Mike.
Right. I feel that Michael Jordan was a better basketball player than Kobe Bryant. Let me look at the producer. Did we get that? All right.
Yeah, it's on tape.
Yeah.
I'll wait for you to make that point. Well, gentlemen,
what do you think of that, Phil? Because again, I'm not trying to convince you. I think you get where I'm coming from, at least somewhat. And you can at least, I think you at least, and I respect where you're coming from, because our eyes do tell us that, when you watch Kobe play, he has an impact on the game, and I'm not saying he doesn't have an impact on the game. What I'm saying is does his desire to control the game sometimes hinder his success? And maybe if he controlled the game less, the cat probably would win more. And when you look at the numbers of when he is supposedly to control the situation, when he is the guy who's supposed to control the situation, control the action, his teams don't win.
I think there's some obvious flaws in Kobe Bryant's game. I think that, first of all, if you look at any player, you're going to find some flaws.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I mean, even the great Michael Jordan, there are some flaws to his game.
Absolutely.
And I just have a hard time critiquing and being overly critical to somebody who's won 5 championships. Now, as I stated last week, I think that Kobe has gotten in his own way at times. And, we weren't there with Shaq and Kobe, but, I take a look at what Phil Jackson wrote in his memoir about the Kobe and Shaq beef. And he said both of them were responsible, but he'd pull Shaq in, pull Kobe in. They talk about stuff. Shaq would walk away from the conversation saying, cool, I'm on the same page, and it would no longer be a problem. Kobe would say the same thing, and Phil says, I look up the next day, and Jim Gray is interviewing him. And Kobe's airing more dirty laundry. So I make the following statement of, Kobe probably got in his own way and could have won a few more championships had he been more less like Kobe, with Shaq. So yeah, I mean, I think there's flaws there that could have led this guy to win more championships. I think your fire hose analogy is spot on in terms of Kobe has the ability to sacrifice points to get other people involved, be more of a distributor, and perhaps if he had I don't know if it's an awareness or a willingness to play those different roles of facilitator and aggressor as needed, yeah, I mean, I think he'd be even more successful with his career, but, it's like talking about Wilt Chamberlain's offensive arsenal and saying that, Wilt could have done so much more. He really could have done so much more. And there's validity to that conversation, but then you take a step back and say, this cat averaged 50 points a game. how critical do we want to be? Kobe Bryant's won five rings.
Right.
And is as much bad as we can say he's done, he did enough, and let me tell it, a significant amount to win these five rings. I don't feel that.
And I'll say he did a significant amount as well. I'm not, you know, I'm a team. I'm all about the team, and all the contributions matter. Everybody gets win shares. That's what I kind of like the stat, is because it gets spread out across the roster, you know. And you know, Cat may have only one, but he had one game that he was responsible for. And, you know, he scored a one. You know, who knows what that one was, but it was a one. You know what I mean? And with Kobe, it's not so much what he could have done, but it's just saying that, you know, when we talk about this guy, we have to put it in perspective. He hasn't actually done that much. I mean, he has five rings, absolutely. Has nothing to sneeze at. But when we talk about putting him in that upper echelon, he hasn't done enough for that.
Yeah.
Because he actually hasn't done that much. He's been a two. And
well,
he's won when he's a two.
And Marcus, he hasn't been a two. I mean, you know, come on, man. Kobe Bryant a two. I mean, again, now you're in that 99.9% range.
give me something that says he's been a one.
My eyes, and
right. But your eyes also see commercials. Your eyes also see highlights. Your eyes also see a bunch of other stuff that has nothing to do with on court that makes you think he's a one.
Well, philosophically, we differ in that you don't feel that there can be two ones on the court. You don't feel like there can be a 1A, 1B. And you know, I'm not going to get caught up in, you know, words or whatnot, but I feel that in certain situations, you can have two go-to guys. You can. And I think that he was the go-to guy on his most recent two championships. There's no question. You asked me 100 out of 100 times, he was the guy. Like, he was the key part of them winning a championship. And I think that he was a key contributor in terms of the first three championships that he won. I think there were many, many nights where he was the guy. But Shaq had a season where he averaged 27, 28, and 13 during one of those championships. I mean, that's one of the top seasons ever for a big guy, you know. And I think during that span, Shaq was probably one of the most dominant. Now, you can't name three or four other big guys that were ever as dominant as he was during that period.
Right, absolutely.
You know, so I mean, I think when we look back at history, man, you know, we start talking about Cousy and Russell and how many championships they have, and well, Russell was clearly the best player, but where does that put Cousy? Where does that put Havlicek? And, you know, I think in some situations you say, well, these two guys are both lead dogs on the team. And I think that Kobe Bryant has done enough to be considered one of the best players ever. And I think when you're one of the best players ever and you resulted in championships, you know, I think the conversation will be different if we start looking at the flaws of Patrick Ewing or Charles Barkley, where these guys had flaws, whether it was personality, leadership, whatever it was. You know, not having enough support, and we're talking like they didn't win enough championships. They didn't win any championships. But we're criticizing the guy that won five.
And what I would say is that when you start to look at the numbers, the numbers say they could have won championships too in the right system, in the right situation with the right guys. And there are a few guys who, no matter what, probably would have won titles. You know what I mean? And I think that's what the Alpha Championship. That's what that framework does. It says, okay, this season, this guy probably would have won a title with any team because he was the dominant player in the league that year.
I don't know if Michael Jordan ever wins a championship without Pippen. No,
but there are probably some other guys you could have put in Scottie's spot that he would have still won. But if you take Mike off that team, if you take Mike off that squad, are the Bulls winning any titles?
Oh, absolutely not. I think you have to give Jerry Krause one of the MVPs because and Pippen's agent, because I mean, when you think about back then, they had a hard salary cap, man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
because Pippen made a mistake of signing that contract a few years before, when you, to, I mean,
back
to
when
get
Pat
a
made
player,
mistakes with contract.
Right. I mean, to get a player of that stature, I mean, you either have to hit on a young player right away or, I mean, a free agent, you're not going to get a guy on that level to come in and play, you know, like Pippen did. But, I mean, if we look at support, Mike played how many seasons before he got a chip? You know, six, seven? And he was playing at an extremely high level. I mean, one of the best players statistically ever.
Yeah, he led the league in win shares all those years.
I mean, he didn't have enough around him. And so nobody can do it alone.
Absolutely.
And, again, I get nervous talking about Jordan and championships. You know, I just the response might blow up my phone, but I just can't get past what I saw as far as Kobe, how he played on the court. And, again, I'm not a huge Kobe Bryant fan. I'm not. I mean, those listening the last 2 weeks, you know, if you don't hear the few statements I've made about not being a huge fan of Kobe, you know, you might think that I bleed purple and gold. I don't. I really don't. I mean, there's a whole lot about his personality I don't like. I don't like a lot about his leadership skills. I just feel that you can't argue with the success, the team success that he's had, and I think that his individual abilities speak for themselves.
Okay, okay. Well, this is a super layered argument, man. And I appreciate everybody entertaining my nerdiness for a minute and walking through these numbers with me. as I tried to back up my point and my assessment. But you know, we'll revisit this over time and check back in on it, man. But it was fun. It was fun to do. I like that kind of stuff. But right now, I'm going to get us into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week as we close out this edition of the Real Sports Guys. Let me hit that up real quick. Bam. Now, we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. PhD, you know how it goes. We need more dogs.
I'm going with CP3. I just love watching this guy play basketball, man. He's got a game that's tailor-made for all-star games. It made me feel like I was watching Isaiah Thomas back in the day in terms of he would just show up and him and Magic would just make the game go. They were the catalyst. So CP3 is my dog of the week, with a side note of a shout out to the outstanding life of Dr. Jerry Buss, who recently passed.
Yeah, shout out to Dr. Buss. My dog of the week, Brittany Griner, Baylor women's basketball player, just passed 3,000 career points, only the eighth player in women's basketball history to do so, joining some elite company. Also became the all-time leader, period, men's and women's, in shot blocks. Just a game-changing kind of player, man. You know, we liken her to the Luau Cinder of women's basketball.
That's right.
Kind of like women's basketball kind of at that stage. When you think about those UCLA teams and where Kareem came in the game as far as the evolution of the game. So, shout out to Brittany Griner. So, that's all for this week's edition of the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. RSG, the Renegades, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Be blessed. Have a great week.
check out some win shares. Go check that information out. Make sure you download the podcast. Get us up at realsportsguys.com. And make sure you hook up on your iTunes. Oh, man. Can't forget to say peace. Peace.